This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Halloween. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from the very rainy Chicago suburbs. So it's going to be pretty tough for the children to go out trick-or-treating here. Anyway, thanks for joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit spingola.com for links for today's program. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left when you visit the website. I also invite you to visit screeningsandyhook.net for information about my newest book, Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences. It is an expose on Big Pharma and Big Government. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net, created by one of our wonderful listeners. I hope that you will consider subscribing to SpingolaSpeaks.net, where one may listen to the audio files of my programs, and people may also post comments during the program. Email any questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatingo.com. Alrighty, our first guest today is from Ireland, and that's where he is right now. His name is Ciarán Wood. He is the author of Ike's Irish Lover, The Echo of a Sigh, and it was just published on October 23rd, 2015. His website is irishbarrister.com/cv.html, and I will post that in the chat room so that people may visit. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Deanna.
Well, it's just wonderful to talk with you again. We've chatted a couple of times, just recently, very briefly. But your book is fascinating. Ike's Irish Lover, The Echo of a Sigh.
And, well, I have to say that the idea came to me from reading the story of Kay Summersby, who was Ike's Irish lover. He was also Ike's Irish. She was also Ike's Irish driver, and she's from the west of Ireland. And I was so taken by the story that I decided to research it, and I came to the United States, and I went to England, and I researched it in Ireland. And in fact, next week I'm going to her family home in West Cork.
Indeed. And the chapter headings are just very, very interesting. And you talk about so many things that people aren't aware of. And one of the things that I found, well, interesting, and I never really thought about it before. I knew that he did have a lover, and I knew what her name was. But then you mentioned several other people, officers, that were in Europe, and talked about some of their little friends.
Peccadillos might be the way the best way to put it. First of all, I should explain that The Echo of a Sigh comes from a Noel Coward song. That's from the 1929 Noel Coward musical Bittersweet, and it's the song I'll See You Again. And she, that is Kay, originally published an autobiography called Past Forgetting, and that gave details of her love affair with Ike, but it did suggest that he was impotent, and my view is that it went a little bit beyond that. The Echo of a Sigh originally comes from that musical as well, and from that Noel Coward song. I start off by saying, and I should say that the book is only available at the moment on as an ebook. I should start off by saying that Winston Churchill was well aware of what was going on, that his married daughter Sarah was having an affair with the American ambassador to the United Kingdom, that's Gil Winant, and his daughter-in-law Pamela was having a relationship with Roosevelt's European envoy Avril Harriman, who was later the U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union. One of his close friends, Harry C. Butcher, or Butch as he was known, divorced his wife in 1946 and married a girl that he'd met in Algeria during the war, a Red Cross, an American Red Cross girl. And the interesting thing about that was that his wife was living with Ike's wife in the Wardman Hotel in Washington during
amazing.
The war. Yeah, it's really coincidental.
Gosh.
Well, I also talk about George Patton, who was said to be having an affair with his niece. Now, I know that there's quite a lot online about Patton's death and how he died in effectively shortly after a slow motion car crash. His niece, as she was known, in fact, she was the wife or the daughter of his half sister, was found dead in her flat in New York shortly after his death. So,
did she commit suicide?
Well, that's the generally accepted view, but if George Patton was anything other than an accidental death, then maybe her death was anything other than accidental as well. But I don't go into that really in the book. What I do go into is General Omar Bradley, Brad as he was known, who took not one but two whack girls on holiday to the south of France, FDR, who was continuing his affair with Page Mercer Rutherford. She was in fact in Georgia when he died, and he told his daughter Anna that he believed that Eisenhower was sleeping with his driver. Very strange, and the worst one of all, perhaps, is King George VI's younger brother, the Duke of Kent.
Yeah,
he died in as you probably know, in a plane crash in Scotland. He was supposed to be en route for Iceland, but he had strapped to his wrist a briefcase full of Swedish krona, whether the suggestion is that he not only liked women, but he also liked men, that he also had an affair with Noel Coward, who's the author of the original song, that he had an affair with a number of Soviet spies, and so on. So really, it doesn't really surprise us that Kay Summersby and Ike got together.
And you said he was impotent?
She said he was impotent. She said that there was a couple of efforts to make love, and I think initially that began in North Africa. I should say that she was a little bit of background about Kay. She grew up in the west of Ireland and went with her mother to England when she was in her teens, because her mother fell out with her father. She had a very strong, what we call a West Brit accent, a very strong English accent. She did what was called the season then, she visited capitals of a number of European cities. She acted in a number of films. She was a model for Worth of Paris, and then she met a fellow called Gordon Summersby, and she married him very quickly. And I have details of their marriage and of their marriage certificate. This fellow, Gordon Summersby, the marriage fell apart very quickly, but she always kept his name. She kept the name Summersby, or Summersby Morgan, as she was known finally, to the end, even when she was with Ike. So then the Second World War broke out. She was listening when the Prime Minister of Britain declared war on Germany on the 3rd of September 1939, and she and her sister decided that they would drive in the motor transport corps. And that's what they did. They joined the MTC, which was a non-uniformed, a civilian body, and she drove an ambulance during the Blitz. And the Blitz, for those listeners who don't know, the Blitz was the German attack, the aerial attack on London and on other big cities in 1940, 1941. And experienced a number of things during the Blitz. She saw a number of people obviously killed by German bombs. On one occasion, she talks about she went to a cinema and the whole of the front row was full of people, but none of them had any heads. This is a very strange effect of bombs. In fact, later on, a bomb dropped near the cottage where she and Ike were living, a Telegraph cottage, and blew the flowers out of a vase, but didn't break the vase. So that was rather strange. But she was driving the ambulance during the Blitz, and as you can imagine, there were no lights during the Blitz. So she had no lights, or just pinprick lights, and she came to know London very well. And after a while, she decided that she was fed up with this life, and she spoke to an American officer at a cocktail party, and she said that she was fed up with driving an ambulance. So he said to her, well, why don't you drive American observers? And at that stage, America wasn't in the war. FDR, as you recall, had sworn that he wouldn't get your American young Americans to fight right. in foreign wars, but in fact he did. So America wasn't in the war at that stage. But she started to drive American officers, and she fell in love with one of them. She fell in love again with one of them, and she started having an affair with him. He was a married officer from Florida, and he was a junior officer, and she started having an affair with him. But she quickly decided, as soon as she was appointed to drive Ike, that she liked Ike. Originally, she was driving Ike and General Clark. General Clark was the son of a Romanian Jewish woman, but in fact became an Episcopalian while he was at West Point. So she was driving the two of them rather unhappily, because they were junior generals in her view. She was driving the two of them, and she quickly came close to Ike. Now, Ike had been sent to England at that stage to consider the whole option of the Second Front, as it was called. That was the invasion of mainland Europe to take the pressure off the Soviets. And he went back to the United States to report to General Marshall, who was the Chief of Staff. And when he came back, she became his permanent driver. And she followed him through England. They stayed together at a number of cottages, and particularly a place called Telegraph Cottage, which was, I suppose, in Ike's eyes, was the place that he wanted to live. She said that she would follow him to North Africa in Operation Torch. Her ship was torpedoed on the way by a German submarine, but she was rescued, and she went to North Africa. When he was called to Cairo to a conference there, she flew with him, and they kissed on the aeroplane. And that was really the beginning of their affair. They kissed on the aeroplane, then they went to Cairo. She stayed in a hotel. They went to see the pyramids and to see the Valley of the Kings and so on. And General Marshall, who was also there, was so pleased that how relaxed Ike appeared that he suggested that Ike take Kay to lunch somewhere else. So he took her to the Holy Land. They went to Jerusalem, and they went to Bethlehem, and they went to the Garden of Gethsemane, which was closed. And in fact, Ike wrote a number of messages to her there, and those messages have come up for auction quite recently. They then went back to North Africa, where her boyfriend, her American boyfriend, who was at that stage a colonel, was put in charge of mine clearing German mines, and unfortunately he was blown up and killed. So she was permanently with Ike at that stage. Then they invaded Italy, or they invaded Sicily. This is the Allies invaded Sicily, and their allies invaded Italy, and he was Ike was then made the person who would be in charge of D-Day, which was the operation to invade Europe. She came back to England with him. Followed him to England. She followed him to France. She went through France. She went through Germany. And at the end of the war, he was, as you can imagine, an extremely popular person, particularly because he'd held together the English and the Americans, who didn't like each other very much at that stage. Was called back to the United States, and he said that he would take what he called his family with him, and he told all of them that in Berlin at that stage that they would be coming back with him, and then he sent a second telegram and he said, not her. And that was how it ended. And Kay subsequently became an American.
He left the dog with her, right, Telek?
He left the dog with her. Yes, he left Telek with her. Telek was a small black Scotty, and no one really was able to explain where Telek got his name from. Kay Summersby says in her book that the name came from Telegraph Cottage and the first letter of her name, which makes an awful lot of sense, because I've never heard of another dog called Telek. He was very close to his master. His master was in charge of him, but then he handed the dog over to Kay. There was an interview in an American newspaper, an American forces newspaper, allegedly with Telek, but really with Kay, in which she spoke about her loneliness and how she'd like to see Ike again, and so on. She became an American citizen. She went to America. She was also a WAC, a member of the Women's Army Corps, and she was the only Irish person to be a WAC. She went to America, where Ike, at that stage, had taken over from Marshall as the Chief of Staff. He was in Washington, and he sent her to California, where she was almost raped. The guy got 15 years for attempting to rape her. She decided to leave the forces, and she made every attempt to see Ike, but I think he was more interested in his political career.
Wow. Well, did Mamie Eisenhower ever know about his little...
she did indeed. In fact, on one visit to the United States, he called her Kay more than once.
And I would say, dear.
Yeah, I would say that she would be very annoyed about that. And she refers to his love for Ireland at one stage. Mm. She's clearly talking about Kay. There's an interesting story. After she published her autobiography, in which she suggested that she'd had an affair with Ike, his son, his one remaining son, John, published a book called Letters to Mamie, in which Ike supposedly told his wife how much he loved her and how he wouldn't have an affair with anybody else and so on. Absolutely. In one of those letters, he said to Mamie, and this was a letter that was sent from Europe. He said, "We're going to a number of us are going to London next week to the theatre, John's coming with us, and General So and So's coming with us, and then we're going on to a nightclub." What he didn't mention, what he forgot to mention, was that one of the people who was coming with him was Kay, and that was on the front page. That picture was was on the front page of the Daily Express, and I've seen that in the British Museum. Yeah, so K presumably was presumably also in the American newspapers, and K Mamie saw that K was sitting next to Ike. They went then they left the theatre and they went to Ciro's nightclub in London, and she was in uniform. Ike danced with her. He then danced with the other women in the group, and then he went back to her and he stayed with her for the rest of the night. And he danced with her for the rest of the night. It was a bit like Cinderella.
My goodness.
So there we are. So I mean, everything points to the fact that they have had an affair. I have heard that, for example, at the Battle of the Bulge, the reason that Ike didn't know about it was that he was in a hotel room with her, with Kay at the time. Now, I haven't included that in the book because that's just gossip. But certainly what I have included in the book is everything that can be proved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I noticed that about you. Yes, and all the footnotes that you have, it's fabulous. Alrighty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest. And our guest this first hour is Ciarán Wood. He is the author of Ike's Irish Lover, The Echo of a Sigh. And I hope that our listeners will purchase that book. It is available as a Kindle. And let's see. There's some questions in the chat room. All righty, I'm not going to ask that question. okay. Do I dare ask this question? Somebody said, all right. I'm still wondering how they could have an affair if he was impotent. Am I?
She said he was impotent. I don't believe it. I don't believe he was impotent. He couldn't have been impotent because he and Mamie had two sons. The first son died when he was a young child. He died when he was 3 years old and he died from scarlet fever. But John went on to graduate from West Point. He graduated on D-Day, strangely enough, and he had children of his own. So I don't think that Ike was impotent.
Okay. Another person asked, can the guest confirm whether the West Point yearbook statement about Eisenhower being a Swedish Jew has any validity to it? And why do they call Dwight Ike?
He was called, all the boys were called Ike. He and his brothers were all called Ike. Eisenhower.
Isn't that funny?
Eisenhower was just a short name for Ike. His mother didn't call him Ike. His mother called him Dwight. His mother was a Jehovah's Witness, originally a Mennonite, but then a Jehovah's Witness from Kansas. And I think his father was a Bible reading Christian from Kansas. The original yearbook from the year of Ike's graduation from West Point did refer to him as a terrible Swedish Jew, and he refers to that himself in his book At Ease, but he doesn't refer to the Jewish part, he refers to the Swedish part, and he says that was because he was blonde. And I suppose probably the name Eisenhower sounded like a Jewish name, but in fact it was a Germanic name. Despite that, he disliked the Germans intensely, and he, when he talked to his friends like Bernard Baruch, he was fully in favor of the idea of pastoralizing Germany after the war.
Indeed, yes. Now you brought up the Battle of the Bulge, and you cover it in your book. Would you like to talk about the Battle of the Bulge, or we'll just go wherever you want to go, whatever you think
would be fantastic. Well, first of all, I suppose that the first thing is to say why I think that they had an affair before we talk about the Battle of the Bulge. And I mean, it's interesting that that, for example, that she was the only woman who was present when the Germans surrendered in Reims. They had already surrendered, or they had surrendered in part in Lüneburg Heath, in part in Italy. But the Germans surrendered en bloc in Reims, and it was the Soviets who decided that they should have another surrender ceremony with other senior people, Keitel, in Berlin. A day or two later, but she was the only person who was present in Reims for the surrender. And afterwards, Eisenhower held up the two pens which were used to sign the surrender in a V sign, and you can see her behind Ike, behind him to his right. And in fact, I've seen moving pictures of them as well. But the official photograph doesn't show her at all. She's been removed.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows why. Not only has she been removed from the photograph, but she's removed from the books which were written about this period. For example, Ike himself doesn't refer to her. He refers to her once as his secretary, which is strange in itself. But he doesn't refer to her at all in his book, At Ease, Stories I Tell to My Friends, which is the book that was recommended to me when I went to Kansas. Butcher's book, My 3 Years with Eisenhower, also makes a very rare mention of Kay. He refers to her 5 times in more than 900 pages. Her name doesn't appear in the index to the book Bodyguard of Lies, which is a book that I've had for many, many years, despite the fact that she occupies a full 2 pages in one chapter. A book written just after the war by Ike's orderly also doesn't mention her.
Amazing. All right, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first hour is I know I keep butchering your word.
Kieran.
Kieran, okay.
Kieran Wood.
I'm sorry.
No.
Anyway, you wrote Ike's Irish Lover, The Echo of a Sigh. Now, my 2 granddaughters came over right before about an hour before the program, and my 8-year-old granddaughter said, "What issues are you going to talk about today on your program?" And I certainly could never have told her. I told her I was talking to a person from Ireland. She was very impressed.
Well, let's talk about, for example, what I was talking about why she was appointed, for example, his secretary. She couldn't spell, as I've discovered from looking at her diaries in Kansas. She couldn't type. She admitted that she couldn't type. She had impossible handwriting. You know that when it came to one particular word in the diary, neither I nor anyone else, not even the people who run the Eisenhower Center in Kansas, could decipher this. We just had no idea. Why was Kay, an Irish woman, the only foreigner to be commissioned as an officer in the U.S. Army, the U.S. Women's Army Corps? And this
exactly.
was over the objections. Yeah, this was over the objections of the head of the WACS. It was a very strange situation. Why was she edited out of the official photograph taken after the signing of the German surrender? Even the photographer doesn't know. And why should 15 publishers and editors put up $1,000 each after the war to bug Kay's phone line in the belief that she sometimes talked to Ike and that they still met occasionally in New York, because that's what happened. That's what Butch told Ike. Ike said, "Well, I don't believe it." But there's $15,000, which is worth a lot of money today, to check on whether or not Ike was still continuing his affair with her.
Amazing. Now, and her diaries are in Kansas, isn't that?
Yes, her diaries are now available. Her diaries were made available to the person who ghostwrote her autobiography, and they're now available in Kansas, and you can look through them. For example, she was the first Irish woman, possibly the first Western woman, in Berlin after the war. And she was there when Keitel signed the surrender at a party which the Soviets had organized. She was very, very involved. She went to Cannes in the south of France a couple of times with Eisenhower. Allegedly, she stayed presumably in a different part of the house. But she seems to have an awful lot of knowledge about him lying on the terrace. Originally, the first time, he just drank and ate and slept. But the second time, he went out partying, and she went out with him. And they were together in Austria as well. They saw Berchtesgaden together, Hitler's retreat.
Gosh.
So I mean, there's an awful lot of, I suppose, reasons why I think that they were having an affair.
Sure. I mean, couldn't Mamie have gone over there and functioned in the same capacity?
That was a possibility. A number of times she suggested that she should come over to Europe, particularly after D-Day, particularly after the Germans were defeated.
Sure.
And Ike wrote back to her. He wrote to his troops as well to say, I'm the same as anyone else, and I'd love to have my wife over here, but unfortunately, we don't have enough room, so she can't come over.
What would he do with that? Right?
Excellent. Absolutely. She said that when somebody had an affair after the war, she went to a number of parties in the United States and New York, and married officers who knew her and who'd been having affairs in Europe steered well clear of her, because they thought that she would blab to their wives about what had been going on in Europe during the war. She didn't say anything to them, but they steered well clear of her. And this is typical of what she did.
My goodness. And it's amazing to me, when I first found out about Clinton and his, his participation in, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, if your wife can't even trust you, how are those citizens supposed to trust people who are so untrustworthy? And then we look at Eisenhower and all the other generals, and I suppose one could say, and you talk about this in your book, that, well, people do things when they're 3,000 miles away from home and they're lonely, but still, I mean, it's,
yes, she says, Kay Summersby says specifically that when you're 3,000 miles away from home, when you're lonely, that it's off, as she put it, off the hometown scoreboard.
Yes.
And I asked somebody whether that what that exactly meant. They weren't absolutely sure. But what we think it means is that that it doesn't really count if you have an affair if you're 3,000 miles away from your wife. And he was 3,000 miles away from his wife, even though he did call his wife Kay on occasion. He was 3,000 miles away, and he was several years away from his wife. He went in 1942. He came back in 1945. For 3 years he was away from home. And I suppose, if you look at the pictures of the two of them, and there's a picture of her on the front of my book, if you look at the pictures of the two of them, maybe that's understandable. She was 20 years younger than he was.
Right.
Although she died after him, she died of liver cancer in the United States, she was always the younger woman as far as Ike was concerned.
Wow. with his referencing to Mamie as Kay, I think that that's people who are going to men who are going to be doing this, they should just adopt the word honey and just not even do names at all. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
He told Kay when he got back that she was livid when he called her Kay, and I can understand that. I can understand.
Well, yes. That.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, what an awful thing.
But he was a very popular man, as you know. The Democrats and the Republicans both sought him for a presidential candidate in 1952. He had at that stage headed NATO in Europe. He'd also been president of Columbia University in New York with a view to raising money, and they both came after him. And he, on a number of occasions, said, "I'm not a politician. It's nothing to do with me." But then he decided that he would run for the Republicans, and he won that election quite easily. But I think that probably that raises the issue of whether or not he asked General Marshall, and this is a matter of some dispute, and it's a matter of dispute by historians now, whether or not he asked General Marshall for a divorce from his wife so that he could marry Kay. Now, the suggestion in my book is that he did. Those papers.
Whoops, did we lose you? Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. I'm not hearing him. Gosh, what should we do? Okay, so. Yes, we've lost our guest momentarily, and he was right when he was talking about something really, really, really interesting. We need to get him back so we can finish that story. So apparently he is in Ireland, so sometimes Skype does drop calls, but hopefully we can get him back again. His book is very interesting. I did get the Kindle version of it, and just the wonderful the names of the chapters. He talks about black troops in the Second Front, Allied Unity, Operation Torch. He talks about Telegraph Cottage, North African Adventures, Casablanca, Sailor's Delight, Operation Husky. Back in Africa, back at Telegraph Cottage, which is what he was referring to, and the dog's name, Ike's dog's name was Telek, T-E-L-E-N-K. Railways or oil plants. He talks about Operation Goodwood in Paris, Operation Market Garden, and of course the Battle of the Bulge. And it's very interesting, the chapter on the Battle of the Bulge. She talks about Dresden and the disarmed enemy forces. Now, when we get our guest back, that is definitely something that I want to talk about, because they changed the category for the Germans that they captured. And did we get him back or no? Are we still trying here? It still shows that he's on. But he obviously is not. Okay. Skype is still attempting to get him back.
Sorry about that.
Back now. Oh yes, what happened?
I don't know. It's a problem with transatlantic difficulties with Skype, I imagine.
Yes. Okay. Well, you were telling us something really well. Everything you've said has been really wonderful. But go ahead and continue.
I was talking about Malcolm Muggeridge, wasn't I? I don't know how far.
No, you didn't go. We lost you before that. You were talking him running for the Republican Party, that he was very popular, and that he had talked to Marshall about divorcing Mamie so he could marry Kay, and that's when we lost you. Right at that juicy part, yes.
That's right. Well, in fact, you can, I have in the book, talked to a number of people. I reproduced, for example, the interview which was done with a cousin of President Truman, and he was president from 1948 to 1952. And, the cousin of President Truman, who's a senior officer in the U.S. Army, remembers, this incident and remembers discussing it with President Truman. Now, President Truman, didn't want or says he didn't want this information used about Ike, so it was put in a secret file somewhere, and certainly it's disappeared now. But what I was saying was that Malcolm Muggeridge, who was a very well-known English journalist, had said in his diary that he shortly after the war was in a club in London, and he was talking to the Secretary of State for War, that's the British Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State said to him that he had been talking to Ike, and that Ike had told him that he had looked for a divorce from Mamie because he wanted to marry Kay, and that he intended to spend the rest of his life not as a soldier but improving relationships between the Americans and the English. I asked the Secretary to the Malcolm Muggeridge Society how could he be sure that this was true, and he said, well, first of all, it's written in handwriting in a diary, and it's in the course of between several other things. It couldn't have been inserted afterwards. So he was talking about this, and a number of other people, for example the history professor at Columbia, was in charge of supervising cables that were ingoing and outgoing to Washington during the war. He saw this cable, and he used to talk to his classes in Columbia. In fact, I'd be delighted if anyone from Columbia University still remembers this incident. He talked about having seen this document. So I believe that the document did exist.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Amazing.
Well, at that stage, what Marshall said to him was, you're not going to marry Kay, you're not going to divorce, Mamie. If you do divorce her, I'll see that you never have another peaceful night. And he said effectively to her, to Ike, you're not divorcing your wife. You're going to, now what went on as well, I just don't know. For example, was Ike a member of any organization? Did he discuss this matter with other people? It's interesting that, for example, that Butch, who was really close to him, his naval supporter, as it were, and a member of his, as he called it, family, did divorce his wife, and that was a woman who knew Mamie and who lived with Mamie, and he married a Red Cross girl that he'd met in Algiers, and he stayed married to her until he died.
Wow. Amazing.
So there are a lot of things which arise now. At the moment, people can look at the first few chapters of the book online. If they want to buy the whole book, they'll have to have a Kindle or something similar. And indeed, if there's any American publisher out there who wants to publish the book, they can get in touch with you and you can pass on any emails to me. So I'd always be interested in seeing this book as a hard copy, because it's about 100,000 words long, and there's about 12,000 words of endnotes, and I really have tried to substantiate everything that I've said.
Oh, I'm very impressed with all the footnotes and endnotes, and you've documented everything. It's a fabulous book, and I hope that the listeners will purchase the book. It is well worth having. Trust me, it's well worth having. Now, in chapter, well, you covered the Battle of the Bulge, and you mentioned that the speculation has it that he was with Kay during the beginning of this battle, but that you did not, you couldn't find actual records of it, and so, but that's probably where he was.
Yeah, I think the thing is that he was his headquarters were in a hotel just outside Paris, and that is apparently where they were together. So there would be no records of it. If she didn't tell her friends, and he certainly didn't tell anyone that I know, then nobody's going to know. They're both dead now, and in fact, as I say at the beginning of the book, pretty well everybody is dead who knew anything about their relationship. I did go to the Imperial War Museum in London, and I did check up. I heard a number of interviews. I heard an interview with her, but I also heard an interview with a Wren, who's a member of the Navy, a woman member of the Navy, who knew both Kay and Ike, and she said, I'll tell you what she said. I'll tell you what she said.
Oh, this is torture. All right. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest the first hour is Karen Wood. And he is the author of Ike's Irish Lover, The Echo of a Sigh. You may purchase that at Amazon, and if you have a computer, you can download the Kindle app and read it on your computer. Okay, she said what?
She said she was a Wren. First of all, she was a British woman's naval officer. Her name was Fanny Huckhill, and she made the point. She said, first of all, we weren't interested. We weren't interested in whether or not Kay and Ike were having an affair. She said. And I think that this is probably true, that during the war, people found their happiness, she said, where they could, as they didn't know whether they might be alive the next day. I think, she said, that people probably got very lonely. And I think she's right. People did get very lonely, but they didn't all necessarily do what Ike did. For example, he shared a love nest with Kay. Love nest is not my expression, but it's the expression that's used at a secluded property in England's East Sussex, yet this house isn't recorded by either of them in their later books, not by Kay, not by Ike, and neither is their other love nest, which I've discovered in Berkshire. And I've spoken to the owner of one of those houses, and certainly he's aware that an awful lot of the planning for D-Day was done in that house by Ike while Kay was living there with him.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Something else in your book. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go on. No. I think, I mean, she's referred to in a number of books, and your listeners can find Kay Summersby online, Summersby, Summersby. She's referred to as Ike's mistress. She's referred to as his girlfriend. She's referred to as his shadow, his most intimate subordinate, his companion about whom he was crazy and with whom he was having an affair that could have left him open to blackmail, as one book said. There's no question in my mind that he was having an affair with her.
Oh, more than it. I mean, it was probably more than an affair. I mean, if he considered marrying her.
Yes.
I mean, he was a married man, for goodness sake.
Yeah, he was a married man, but it was probably quite a long time since Mamie had his son. Now, his son, John, was quite friendly with Kay, and he says in a number of interviews that he didn't know whether or not the old man, as he called him, Ike, succumbed to Kay's charms or not. I think that there's no doubt that he did.
Indeed. Now, you also mentioned that Ike smoked 4 packs of cigarettes a day.
Yeah.
Which I think he just overdid a lot of stuff, didn't he?
He did. He overdid the smoking, certainly. He smoked all the way through the war. And Kay says that at one stage when there was a shortage of cigarettes, and there was a shortage because of the black market, she gave him some of her allotment of cigarettes. But he continued to smoke. He smoked like a trooper. And then, as your listeners will know, he wasn't well. He eventually was taken to hospital, and he was told, give up the cigarettes, and he gave them up completely.
Wow. What? This is is a fabulous book, and we've just had a wonderful conversation. I thank you so very, very much for being on the program. It's been delightful.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Alrighty, bye-bye. Alrighty, we'll be back in 3 minutes.